It's Independent Movie Overload this week on Movie Rollers. We review Your Sister's Sister, Seeking a Friend for the End of the World, and Lola Versus. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, it's Joe.
Hi, it's Yazdi.
And hi, it's Rashmi.
Rashmi's had one too many two martinis.
I thought I'd mix it up.
You mixed me up.
I know.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. And we will be in the back of an airplane for a long time, I think. We're off to Taiwan in a week or two.
Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to that trip.
And Yazdi has some vacation coming too.
Yes, I shall be one with nature at Yosemite.
Mm.
Who my friend described as a theme park dedicated to awesomeness. So I'm actually really envious of you going there.
I've never been in all these years and I can't wait.
It's pathetic. We live in Southern California. This is like one of the easiest places to get to for us as far as fabulous destinations go. We should go. We should go.
Okay.
Yeah, Rashmi's not convinced.
I'm not a camper.
I don't want to camp either.
Yes, yeah, you camping?
No. No, we're staying at this really nice lodge, which is about 30 miles away from Yosemite. And we're going to just do the drive and, you know. So, no, I mean, I don't mind camping for a day. I don't like to camp for, you know, like 5-6 days. I need hot water eventually.
Yes.
Camping, I think, is overrated. It was really fun as a kid, but that's because there were adults there to do all the hard stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, let's talk about our three movies, Your Sister's Sister, Seeking a Friend, and Lola Versus the World. Which one do you want to talk about first?
No, it's not Lola Versus the World. You just mashed up two names.
Oh, well, Lola Versus is like this abrupt cut-off title, and it does infer Lola Versus the World. Come on, give me that.
Well, let's do the titles properly.
All right. So Your Sister's Sister, Seeking a Friend for the End of the World,
correct,
and Lola Versus. My, aren't we picky tonight. So which one should we do first? Your Sister's Sister?
Sure.
All right.
So Jack, emotionally struggling a year after the death of his brother, takes up an offer from his friend Iris to stay at her father's isolated cabin. There, Jack unexpectedly encounters Iris's sister Hannah, and their night together triggers an unexpected entanglement of relationships when Iris suddenly arrives to the cabin the next day. This stars Emily Blunt, the wonderful Rosemary DeWitt, and Mark Duplass, and it's directed and written by Lynn Shelton. Now, yes, you saw this at Toronto Film Festival last year, and it's just being released shortly, so that's very interesting.
Yeah, I saw it at the Toronto Film Festival, and the director, Lynn Shelton, and the very unknown Mark Duplass at that time, they were there in attendance, and they came up after the movie and answered questions, so it was quite a treat.
Very nice. So, Joe, why don't you kick us off this time?
Oh, okay. I could make a short list of little niggles, but I'm not going to bother, because this is a brilliant little indie flick. I'm genuinely surprised that the dialogue was completely improvised, because the chemistry between all of these actors is so good. And, all right, I'm going to allow myself one little nitpick. I think things go a little awry plot-wise in the final act, and I'm sure the two of you will know what I mean by that, but I didn't really care. This was really good stuff.
Yazdi.
I'm just going to say one thing. I want to hug this movie until it suffocates. I like it so much. I've seen it more than 6 months ago, and how good it made me feel is not gone. It sticks with me. This is the reason I go to the movies. When things work, they work really well. I love this movie.
Okay, it might be one of those shows. Because for me, this was a completely indie film. And I looked up the definition of what an indie means. And the true definition of indie means the budget is less than $4 million. But for me, and I think for most of us, indie means small, character-driven, and nothing much really happens. So this film was the archetypal indie film.
I don't feel that way at all.
Now, for me, I think it was an interesting story, but I think it's somewhat predictable because it's about these three people and their individual and collective relationships. But it felt a little formulaic to me.
It's absolutely unpredictable. That's the part I loved about the movie. I didn't know where these characters were going. I really didn't. And I like the fact that the dialogue felt so genuine. I felt like I was eavesdropping on conversations. Yes.
Yeah, but that's to do with the acting, Yazdi, not to do with the story.
Well, you could argue that.
Okay.
This is a difficult one to talk about because I think a couple of plot elements here are real spoilers.
Yeah, I don't want to give it away.
And the trailer shows way too much of the story of this movie. I'm glad that they still genuinely managed to throw me another punch towards the end of the movie that was not given away in the trailer. But I don't know. I agree with you to some extent, Rashmi. This wasn't all about plot, but it was totally unpredictable. I had no idea what these characters were going to do in the situation that they had gotten themselves into. I don't know, that was just a very surprising situation for me to be in, given the potentially predictable nature of how everyone would behave in this kind of situation. It continually threw surprises at me in terms of what happened next and the characters' motives and all of the kind of unsaid things. Yazdi, you said it very well. You felt like you were eavesdropping. There's a delightful scene between Emily Blunt and Rosemary DeWitt during A Sleepless Night that is almost unforgettable. It was so believable. There's an intangible connection between the two of them that goes beyond what they're saying to each other. They've got this connection that's in their eyes, and it's so believable. I mean, these are two fine actresses, but the two of them together produce something that's greater than the sum of their parts. I mean, that scene, like you say, Yazdi, will resonate with me for months.
I mean, I think it was flawless acting. I'm not taking away from the acting of the movie. I'm just saying the story for me was very predictable, and I knew exactly what was going to happen. So, yeah, I cannot fault the acting. This was beautiful acting.
I mean, all three of them, Mark Duplass, Rosemary DeWitt, who, you know, in if there was justice in the world, would be as popular as, I don't know, anybody.
Jolie.
More popular than Jolie. Don't even get me started.
I mean, she's just, I mean, they're all not perfect. And Emily Blunt, I mean, God, I mean, I'm waiting for her to fall and stumble. But, you know, all three of them are perfect. So I really like the fact that this movie exemplifies that when you have good actors, you don't need much else. You know, you just, and you know, the director spoke about how they filmed the whole movie. You know, she mentioned that the very first movie she made was very scripted, and she did it that way, and then she found she was kind of very constrained. So the second movie, she gave the actors, you know, just this bare bone, you know, idea of a plot and let them improvise. And it worked so beautifully, and it was so freeing that ever since then, all her movies she's been doing, you know, using that format. And really, you let these actors, you know, do their thing. And if there's truth to it, you know, you can have something substantial. And I think this movie is evidence of that. But I think more than anything else, the reason why I connected so deeply with this movie was because I think this is one of the rare movies that really gets siblings right. You know, I think, you know, you love your siblings so much, you respect them, you admire them so much. But, you know, at the same time, you have this history with them, perhaps more than any other human being on the earth that you know, with the exception of your parents, that you have a history with. So you know exactly, you know, what to say or do, which might hurt them the most. So it makes for a very unusual dynamic between siblings. And you know, I could totally sense that between the Emily Blunt and Rosemary DeWitt character. And I seldom see that in movies. So I really appreciated that.
Yeah, I you know, I think for me there were moments of dullness, and I was like sitting there thinking, come on, let's just move this along. But I think that's because I found it so predictable, and had I found it, I think, as unpredictable as maybe you both did, then it would be a different experience for me. I also didn't like the way they explained Emily Blunt's English accent. I know I always get hung up on accents, but it kills me. I hated how they explained that away.
Well, I mean, they had to do something. The characters were supposed to be sisters, and they felt like they came from opposite ends of the world. So I gave them that one. It didn't offend me, I think, in the way that it might have with a lesser film. But I mean, I have to talk about Emily Blunt just in particular. Yasdi, you mentioned Rosemary DeWitt earlier, but Emily Blunt here, oh my God, lovely, lovely, lovely. And somehow she managed to stay on the right side of being sappy, because her character here was extremely sappy and weak to the point that in many other plots and dialogues, you would want to shake her and slap her about the face and say, wake up. But here she manages to walk that line perfectly, because you find yourself believing in many of the decisions that she's making. I mean, and there's one particular moment that really stuck in my mind, which is when Mark Duplass's character is about to confess something, or at least she thinks he is. And the look on her face and in her eyes was so believable that it looked like it was a documentary or a reality show. I mean, just what a great actress here.
Yeah, but I do think that both Rosemary DeWitt and Emily Blunt, much as they're great actresses, they're a little bit typecast. And again, I just feel like here's another lovely, lovely rendition from Emily Blunt, and here's another broken rendition from Rosemary DeWitt. And I just feel like they're really in jeopardy of really ending up as the nice person and the broken person.
But they're so good at it.
But I did like Mark Duplass, and I feel like he's rather proving himself as a talent on both sides of the camera.
No contest for me there. He's all over the place suddenly. He's like literally in every other movie we are watching these days.
Oh, yeah, he's in our next movie as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Seeking a Friend.
Okay, anything else from anyone?
No, let's wrap up. You go first.
Okay. Your Sister's Sister. I will give this one simply a 7 out of 10. I thought it was very nice, although somewhat predictable. Yazdi.
I'll just repeat what I said at the start. This is the reason I go to the movies. I mean, when it works, it just works so beautifully. I loved everything about this movie. There's not a false step. It's not precious. It's near about a perfect film for me. I want to grab strangers on the street and beg them to go see this movie. I like it so much. I'm going to give it the rare 9 out of 10. I mean, the glow on this movie has not subsided 9 months after having seen it. It's a thing of wonder. I wish all movies were like this.
Joe?
I can't forgive it for one particular plot choice towards the end, as I mentioned at the beginning, but clearly what pulls this film together is some skill behind the camera and a lot of skill in front of it. Obviously made on a shoestring budget, but it really doesn't feel that way. This is a well-made, well-acted, great example of independent filmmaking. It gets my 8 out of 10.
So we weren't so far off, really.
No, and that's a stingy 8, but it's an 8. Really good stuff.
Yeah, I'd say mine was more of a generous 7.
Okay. And yes, this was a stingy 9.
Yes, why not the 10?
He's never going to give us a 10.
I'm never going to give a 10, no.
For a movie to get Yazdi's 10 would mean that it has to, like, solve world hunger.
Yes. Or tell us the meaning of life.
Now, a 9.5 on the other hand.
Yes.
Which I won't let him have. So let's talk about our next movie, Seeking a Friend for the End of the World. This movie is written and directed by Laureen Scafaria. I hope I said her name correctly there. It stars Steve Carell and Keira Knightley. And the basic premise of this movie is set in the not too distant future. The movie explores what people will do when humanity's last days are at hand. The movie follows the respective journeys of Dodge, played by Steve Carell, and Penny, played by Keira Knightley. The two come together and their respective outlooks brighten, if not the world's. That's a terrible introduction, but that's basically the movie in a nutshell. So who wants to give us their opinion on this? Rashmi has her hand in the air. Go for it.
So this is a one-joke movie, only the joke isn't so funny and it wears out its welcome very quickly. I wish the world had ended during the screening of this movie so I didn't have to waste my time watching it.
Ooh, wow. That's harsh. Yazdi.
Yes, he's going to say, I love it now.
No, I think this movie is a litmus test for the diehard romantics versus those who are not. And I think whether this film delights you or absolutely frustrates you will depend on which side of that fence you sit on. I actually sat on the fence where I think the movie falls short of great, but I think it has a lot going for it. I liked it.
So he has the NFL suit called himself romantic and me unromantic. Just for our listeners out there, if they didn't catch the subtlety of that sentence.
It was implicit. It was somewhere at the bottom. You just pulled it out.
Okay, this might be a boy-girl thing then, because I quite like this movie. I liked it more than I think perhaps it deserved to be liked, if you know what I mean by that. The movie was, for me, very much carried by Steve Carell and his performance here, because it was absolute perfection. I think it's the best I've seen him in terms of, you know, just general acting. And I read an interview with him in the LA Times, and he's very surprised at him being the romantic lead. But he nailed it here. So I think that was great. Rashmi, you said it earlier, one-joke movie. I think the premise itself was an interesting one, but I think what they did with that was a little it was perhaps underused, and it was used to tell this little romantic story, but I think a few other things could have been thrown in there to just make it a little bit more realistically sci-fi, but obviously that's not what they were going for here.
Yeah.
So, you know, I liked it.
Yeah, so I've got a couple of things to react to. I mean, the one redeeming factor about this film is how people would act, and it showed that in small doses. I actually saw a better film when we weren't watching Keira Knightley and Steve Carell. I actually liked the movie, which was how people would react if it was the end of the world, and I hated that romance aspect, because Steve Carell and Keira Knightley in a real world would never get together. And I just couldn't buy that relationship. And so inherently, if you don't buy that relationship, you can't buy the movie. It was all way too predictable and way too easy, and that just feels lazy to me.
I think there is a clarity of vision somewhere in this film that is wanting to break free, but I think the movie is too afraid that it might alienate mainstream audiences. So I think the original script of this movie probably was a lot darker and more melancholy, but I think I can sense kind of some meddling, and I think the movie's trying to be too much for too many people, and I think that's where it fails. Well, when I personally don't think it fails, but I think that's where people might have a problem with it. I actually think that the script is pretty good, because even though it's about the end of the world, it doesn't want to make a big deal about it. And there are some pretty good reflections, you know, in terms of what would different people do. And for me, ultimately, the thing which swayed me towards the positive end is that, and this is a pretty big accomplishment, I think, is in the moment, the movie did actually get me thinking about what I would do in my personal life if I were to find out that the world was going to end in 3 weeks. I mean, I really started thinking about, oh my God, you know, this is what I would do. I would stop doing this. I would sell this. I would buy this. I would do a trip here. I would go see this. Actually, while the movie was playing, I started, you know, a lot of introspection about, you know, what a person might do. And I think, you know, I think the script is very successful if it makes the viewer kind of start thinking about that. And for that alone, I forgive it for all its faults.
Yeah, but you know why you had time to think about that, Yazdi? Because you were watching a crappy movie and it didn't keep your attention.
No, I mean...
Seriously, I mean, how can you have time to think about what you would do if you're watching a movie?
I sense a 4 out of 10 coming along here from Rashmi, but I agree with you, Yazdi. I mean, I think that sense of impending doom and getting one's life in order and really reflecting about the things that are important to somebody really did come across well in that movie. I think, like you, I went through that exact same set of emotions. I was like, wow, what if this was real? Like, what if this was real? Who would I call? Where would I go? What would I do? How would I spend that time? You know, and there were some interesting premises. I mean, you know, the people that ended up working in the office, you know, I'm like, I'm not that person. That wouldn't be where I would spend my time. You know, you think about family members and getting to them and that kind of thing. So I think it worked very well in that perspective. From that perspective, for me, the film's biggest problem, and come on, guys, you've got to know where I'm
going
to go.
I know exactly where you're going. Let's say it in unison, Yasli. Let's say it.
Three, two, one.
Keira Knightley.
Leave her alone. Leave her alone.
Now, we've just come from LA Film Festival, where we have audiences with actors, and, you know, whenever you have those kind of situations, you sit down, you connect with these people, and you think, I'm never going to ever criticize anyone for bad acting again, because they're all working really hard, and there's so many problems, and they have so many things to consider, and acting itself is a really tough craft. I have the utmost respect for every actor out there. But Keira Knightley, I just can't buy you. I'm sorry, you don't convince me in anything you do. You overdo it, and this movie would have been so much better had somebody else been cast in here, because the delta, the gulf between the two performances is really destructive to this movie.
I mean, Joe, you said a little bit about Steve Carell and this whole interview that he's done, saying, you know, he didn't imagine himself as a leading man, a leading romantic man. You know why? Because he's not. Steve Carell is a funny guy, and he doesn't work as a lead romantic person.
Disagree.
So that's what, I mean, okay, Keira Knightley's problems aside, Steve Carell is not a leading romantic man. And why would you guys know that? Because you're not the recipients. I'm a woman.
And that's what I'm saying. It's a boy-girl thing, because I think he represents the regular guy in all of us that, to me, at least, I relate to him as the character that he plays. And maybe that's what you are missing here.
Right, maybe.
He's not like a, you know, a Tom Cruise character that's unrelatable to. He's a regular guy that, you know, is not especially good-looking, but has got this charisma about him that I think is appealing, at least to guys, if not to you, Rashmi.
I mean, I'll grant you this, Rashmi, that he's perhaps not a romantic lead in the way that, you know, Ralph Fiennes might be to Jennifer Lopez in Made in Manhattan, or one of those very typical stuff. But I think at this point now, Steve Carell can do this kind of character in his sleep. And the reason why I think he can, and he's done many movies like this, Dan in Real Life.
Right.
Even Crazy Stupid Love, his character was very similar to this one. And I think it's because he has a genuine, believable darkness about him. You know, there's a melancholy about him which seems genuine. And I think this kind of stuff can really seem cardboard and fake. And he somehow makes it very believable. And I think that's a gift. You know, it's the same reason why, you know, Liam Neeson is so good in action movies now, because he brings some level of depth to it. So I think that's what I admire about him, and that's why I think he's so much more than just a funny guy. And I really appreciate him as an actor. I've grown to really like him.
Yeah, and again, I don't mean to belittle his acting, because I think he does act well in this. I think he did a better job in Dan in Real Life. I even think he did a better job in Little Miss Sunshine. I just think that, again, for me, he was miscast in this movie. If this is about the romance, if it's about the end of the world and it's cited as a comedy about the end of the world, it's cited as a comedy about the apocalypse, then that piece didn't work for me. It changed my expectations. The final gripe I had with this movie was, what was with all the 80s music, especially all the Wang Chung? This wasn't the 80s, so what with all the 80s music?
I didn't notice any of that.
I didn't notice that either.
Sorry. I think maybe it's Laureen Scafaria. She's of that age that where, and now she's making movies. She's getting a chance to express herself artistically. And what do? You gravitate towards what you know and what gives you that feeling. So, yeah, didn't notice that. Sorry.
Okay.
Now, we did get to sit with Laureen Scafaria at one of the LA Film Festival scenes, and, you know, she did speak about this movie, you know, this being like the 19th script, I think, that she's written, and, her, you know, her excitement at the opportunity of directing. So, in terms of her direction, I thought she did a good job here.
Yeah.
I thought the movie was very well assembled, and, you know, to be both writer and director enables you to realize your vision in many ways. I think the movie itself was decently done. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think it was very competently directed.
Yeah, I think I actually was very engaged in the last half hour of the movie. I was interested in where it was going, and I wasn't very, I don't want to give anything away, but I wasn't happy where it eventually landed up. But I was really invested by that time. And I think, you know, you can always tell an inept director. You can't always tell a good director, but an inept one you can always tell. And, you know, there was nothing inept about it. The movie worked. So, no, a good job with the directing.
All right. Should we wrap it up?
Let's wrap this one up. Yazdi, why don't you go first?
Yeah, I mean, I can't shake off the feeling that the movie in its original form was far superior, and somehow it's been sweetened by, I don't know who, by the powers that be, by the studios or whatever, and kind of forced into this romantic comedy genre that it really doesn't belong. I think this movie wants to say more things about more serious matters, and I wish there was a little bit more bitterness to the movie, a little bit more melancholy, and I think a better ending would have also helped the movie. So, but I still admire it, you know, the way it is assembled, the way it is. I still liked it, and like I said, any quote-unquote romantic comedy which makes me think about my own life has done something good. I give it 8 out of 10.
Yeah, this movie was very engaging in the moment. Like you, Yazdi, I think it towards the end it kind of lost a little steam. I think plausibility wise, Rashmi, you raised it there with the romance, perhaps was a bit of a stretch. And damn it, Keira Knightley, you ruined another one for me. So the movie is a 7 out of 10 for me. I would recommend it to people. I would say go see this one. Keep your expectations in check. Certainly when it gets its DVD release, I will be telling people that this is one that they should go see or add to your Netflix queue without any hesitation at all.
Hold your horses, everyone. Moments of funny followed by long periods of dull. I would say wait until the film It's a Disaster comes out, because that's how an apocalyptic movie should be done. I'm going to give this one, Joe, you predicted it, half of Yazdi's score, 4 out of 10. It just didn't work. It just didn't work for me. It felt neurotic and misplaced and... Once that one issue was out, it was like, now where do we go?
But didn't you... I really liked the commentary it had on what people might be doing when that happens. You know, that whole thing about the people at the restaurant and the whole thing about...
Yeah.
I like that.
I mean, yeah, but that's what I'm saying. That, for me, was the better movie than the rest of the movie that was about Steve Carell and Keira Knightley.
Yeah, I'll give you that too.
And I hope we get to talk about It's a Disaster.
All right, well, let's move on to our third movie of the week, Lola Versus, the one that I want to keep calling Lola Versus the World. So, Rashmi...
Now, maybe if Greta Gerwig had been in Seeking a Friend for the End of the World, that would have been a better movie.
Actually, I think that would have been a better casting
decision than Knightley. She would have been a really good primary character. Okay, sorry.
All right.
I'll stop going on.
So, Yazdi, tell us about Lola Versus...
Is this another huggable one from Yazdi? Two huggable so far.
Yes, one more than the other. If people ever have a doubt between your sister's sister and Seeking a Friend for the End of the World, no question about it, go for the former. Okay, but we are here to talk about Lola. So Lola Versus puts under examination a year in the life of the title character Lola, a young 20-something sprite who lives in New York City. Watch Lola versus her boyfriend who gets cold feet just before their planned wedding. Watch Lola versus her friends who are trying to help her navigate her love life after that. Watch Lola versus her parents who are trying to be as well-meaning as possible. The film is written by Zoe Lister-Jones, who incidentally also plays Lola's best friend in the film, and it was directed and co-written by Daryl Wayne. The movie stars Greta Gerwig in the title role, with supporting cast rounded up by Bill Pullman, Deborah Winger, Hamish Linklater, and Joel Kinnaman. What do you guys think of Lola Versus?
So this movie had a cliche 30-something script. We had uneven performances, music, and some terrible plot contrivances. None of it mattered. I thought this was a great little indie film. It was engaging, charming, and although Greta Gerwig, I think, bore the weight of the movie on her shoulders, she had great support from the rest of the cast. I really like this little film.
Yeah, I love Greta Gerwig, and this almost feels like the audition of her life that she's giving here. Was she successful? Somewhat. I certainly think she was able to successfully carry the film on her own. I think the film is good, but not brilliant. It's not a rush out and see, but it's good, and I enjoyed it.
So to me, this movie felt like the equivalent of you making some plans with a best friend, and then your friend not showing up. I felt distinctly betrayed. I mean, this is the kind of movie that I really look forward to. You know, on paper, it seemed like absolutely my kind of movie, a small independent film set in New York City about the challenges and frustrations of a 20-something character played by the lovable, very upwardly trending Greta Gerwig. I mean, who doesn't love Greta Gerwig? And it also stars Bill Pullman and the criminally underutilized Deborah Winger. I was ready for it. It was the recipe for the perfect movie. And what a disappointment to have the movie not hit its mark. I couldn't get past its faults. I'm not a fan.
Wow.
Yeah, I couldn't get past. Yeah, it just... I can see how it works in little pieces, but it just doesn't come together.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think it was trying to be funnier than it actually was. And I think it was trying to be clever, but it reminded me too much of 500 Days of Summer. And that was really much, much better.
Way better.
I can see.
So you liked it?
Yeah, I did. I think Gerwig has a lot to do with that, because the things that her character goes through and the things that her character kind of deserves in this movie, ordinarily that kind of stuff would annoy me. And like I say, this was kind of cliche 20, 30 something type fodder, but she just delivered this performance that, that engaged me so completely. I felt for her in all of these circumstances. I felt how frustrated and how nonsensical life seems. And so I think it reminded me perhaps of maybe the way I felt in my 20s and 30s, kind of trying to figure out what does this all mean? Is it me on my own? So I think for me, it was just a matter of connecting with the movie and feeling for that character, which I did from start to finish.
I mean, I think Lola as a character was interesting to watch, but Greta Gerwig seems way more interesting. And I think that she's so joyful that it almost felt like this film was putting her in a box. And so although she played the dramatic lows very well, she's inherently such a joyful person that that's the film I want to see. And I actually liked her in Damsels in Distress more, because she seemed a little bit more joyful in that movie.
Yeah, I guess I had a problem with her character itself. I mean, I think the writing is pretty good. It's really funny in parts. It's very witty. It's got kind of a, urban modern edge to it. But I think the plot overall, particularly about the emotional arc of this main character, seemed undercooked. It almost seemed like they should have worked a little bit more on it before they started making the movie. And I don't expect a plot to have big, grand, sharp turning points where major things happen. I mean, I'm fine with subtlety. And I also don't ask that the main character be absolutely lovable. I mean, I love people who have faults and who are unpredictable and who behave contrary to expectation. And this Lola character does all of these things. But then after a point, her behavior just seemed so irrational. I mean, it wasn't even a question of likable or not. It just strained believability. She was just messing up with so many people that she shouldn't mess up, almost recklessly. I mean, I don't want to judge her behavior, but...
But you are.
but she didn't seem deserving of sympathy, because she was behaving so irrationally, and I had a problem with that.
Yeah, I do see that, and I think ordinarily this stuff would really annoy me, but I think the movie. So the movie I think has some issues in terms of the character arc and how it's kind of put together, the overall plot and where we go, where we end up, and does she learn anything from these experiences, or does she continue behaving in these odd ways? All of those I think are very valid faults with the movie. From my perspective, they're overcome by some very nice writing. I think the dialogue especially was very well done, and It was funny. I mean, none of it was kind of belly laugh funny, but I really found the irony in many of her situations, and it was relatable. And I think the fact that it was relatable kind of rescued it from disaster from where I stand.
I think you knew women like this in college.
I married one. No, I think that's probably true, actually. I think there's probably more than one or two friends that kind of lived their life like this. Gosh, that's an astute observation.
And I think that you were the rescuer in those days. So I think that something appealed to your nature about this kind of broken character.
Yeah, I did. I wanted to care for her.
I knew it.
I wanted to take her under my wing, and was like, Lola, it doesn't have to be like this.
And then she would kick you and run away with somebody else.
Right.
Then how would you have felt?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and leave her dirty knickers in the corner of your room, probably.
Yeah, that happened more than once as well.
Yeah.
Let's not talk about that.
I had two other issues with the movie, and I'll be brief. One is that I'm a big fan of Hamish Linklater. And, I don't know if you know him from television. He plays Lola's you know, good friend who really means well for him, well for her, and you know, tries to help her out. You know, he is one of the most particular, witty, infectious personas, you know, in film or television right now. And he was actually the best thing in Battleship, you know, if you remember him from that movie. But here, you know, the script just completely neuters him. I mean, he's left with nothing to do, which I can even forgive. But I think the one thing I can absolutely not forgive, I mean, it's cinematic original sin, is you do not bring Deborah Winger into a movie and not have her do anything. I mean, you know, she can do wonders. I mean, I think she's one of the greats out there. And she has literally nothing to do. She plays her mom and she says like three pieces of dialogue and goes away. And I, you know, that's unforgivable. I mean, I don't know why she was in this movie. I don't know why Bill Pullman was in this movie. He has nothing to do either. So, you know, you cannot be a filmmaker, ask one of the greats to come in your movie and then not have them do anything. So, sorry.
All right, let's wind this one up then. So, Yazdi, why don't you go first?
So, yeah, I'll concede that the movie is funny in parts and reasonably watchable, actually. And it should have been a frothy, effortless charmer, or it should have had, like, emotional combustion. I don't think it has either one of those. I think it's a lost opportunity. I give it 5 out of 10.
Oh, Joe.
I would like to give this an 8 out of 10, but that would put this on par with Your Sister's Sister, which was vastly superior in every which way. So, sorry, because you're in the wrong episode, today you're going to get a 7 out of 10 from me. My last comment about the movie was, did anyone else love the bright, saturated New York that this movie had in it?
Yeah, I loved it.
This was a lovely depiction of New York. This was all the positives, all the nice bits from Sex and the City, none of the grittiness. And I really enjoyed being in New York for the time of this movie.
Yeah,
good
observation. Yeah, very nice. Yeah, I was going to say, watch this when you're awake, because if you're tired, you may fall asleep. Not because the film's bad or boring, it's just slow. So I'm going to give this a 6 out of 10. Better than average.
I didn't think I was going to be the one of us that liked this the most. It's really funny how that works sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah,
maybe it's just a question of expectations.
Yeah.
I really like, and you know, Greta Gerwig, bless her heart, she really tries and she does a great job.
And she's working so hard. We've seen her in so many things this year. I think this is her year.
I like her a lot.
I like her.
I think
a lot
she's too. Very typecast, but I think she's comfortable in that role as the slightly lost, very sweet, and perhaps not too bright 20-30 something. I mean, that's really where she seems to be. Kind of the nice girl that makes bad decisions. So let's wrap this one up. Mail at moviewallahs.com, twitter.com/moviewallahs, facebook.com/moviewallahs as well. Oh, and Movie Wallahs is on SoundCloud. So we do have a SoundCloud page, soundcloud.com/moviewallahs. It's an easier way to listen to some of our webcasts, but we're working on making them more accessible in future as well. So until our next show, which will hopefully be not too long from now. Too many movies, too little time. Good night from me.
And me.
As well.